everyone. Welcome back to the Scared to Death podcast. My name is Alice Klein. I'm a senior here at James Madison University, and I am studying psychology.
My name is Aya Nassif, and I'm also a senior here at James Madison University, and I'm studying psychology and theater.
Today, our guest is Wilfie Williams. Wilfie is a musician from London, England, who has a particular interest in Ernest Becker and existentialism. Wilfie, would you like to tell us a little bit more about yourself?
How do you do? Greetings from London.
We're happy to have you.
I'm happy to be on US time. It's pretty early for you guys, isn't it?
Just a little.
They got you up early for me, I see. Must be important. But yeah, yeah. My name's Wilfie Williams. I'm like a singer-songwriter from London, and just recorded a new album at the Abbey Road, which is made famous by the Beatles, if any of my American friends like the Beatles.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Sounds familiar.
I think I've heard of them.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah,
I think I've heard of indie band.
Yeah, a little folk.
UK band, they did one on
the track. Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, my music's really influenced by the Beatles, but also the theoretical work of Ernest Becker, which is what sort of drew me to you today. You want to know a little bit about my background in music? So my first love is writing and performing songs. But my second is the academic study of music. So I have I'm not sure if it's the same in America, but I think it is. I have a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in music. But my study focus is really in psychology and the evolution of music and its emotions.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. And what kind of inspired you to like pursue a career like in music performance, I guess, like moving out of psychology and theoretical work?
Well, there was a choice. There was a crossroads at one point where I could have just studied psychology, but I just love music. I'm just passionate about music and just always have been. I mean, my father took me to we call it a gig. Yeah, like a gig in America. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. We got those as well.
Just call me up on my English if you say that. No. Stop saying colour. It's colour. Pull me up on my English. Yeah. So my father took me to a gig when I was 5 years old, which I mean it's unheard of nowadays, but I just sort of remember looking down. We were up in what's called the stalls in the theater, so up high, and I just remember looking down at that band, and there must have been something that happened, because I wanted to be a musician. And so that's what I did. I was like, right, I'm gonna be a musician, through the highs and the lows.
So you knew from a young age you wanted to do music. This isn't in our list of questions, but if you want to expand a little on this, your first experience like approaching psychology and discovering that field?
This is very interesting, because I was a musician and living a musician's life, which, you know, this is an academic broadcast, but I think we all know what that means.
Yeah.
And I was quite frantic at the time, and my band was playing a lot, and we were all over the country, and I had a dream of like a mandala. It was like a, trying to explain what a mandala is to people, but like a square shaped circle, or it's very mystical. I went to the bookshop and I just said, I've had this dream, I want to know what it means. I was just like, there's an image, I can see the image. And the guy gave me Carl Jung, Man and His Symbols. And it sat on my bookshelf for a few years collecting dust. I found the symbol, it was pretty obvious. My life was scattered. I needed direction. I needed focus. But that was actually the first time that I came across psychology. And it was only years later that I went back to Man and His Symbols, and obviously the relevance of Freud and Jung and Otto Rank and Becker, they all started to become very clear for me. But it's funny how these little synchronicity moments happen, you know, the band when I was a child and the dream book. So I mean, basically, yeah, that's how I first got interested in psychology.
Yeah, wow, that's like really wild. So like, out of all those psychologists, how did you kind of hear about Ernest Becker, like specifically out of everyone else? Did he talk to you more than others? Did it kind of like come out for you more?
Yeah, I've got an interesting story to tell about my introduction to Becker. So I had a mentor, which is her name was Alessandra Cavalli, and she was an analyst at the Society of Analytical Psychology in London. And we used to talk in depth about psychology, and she was like a brilliant woman, a brilliant, brilliant woman, a real saint, I would say. She did so much work for children and child trauma and psychology. She's well known in London and across Europe. And she sent me a message in April 2020 saying, I've got the message here. It said, I was like, oh, I've got all these childhood traumas. Oh, I've got all this. I need to. She said, no, the original trauma is a fear of death. It's
Oh, wow.
anxiety.
Wow.
And then a month later, she died, COVID-related illnesses. It was one of the last texts that she sent me. It was like, we'd finally got to the very center, the very what she called the original trauma, and I haven't heard anyone else call that, which is the fear of death. And so, obviously, when she died, it was tragic, and I was searching through books, and I came across Ernest Becker, The Denial of Death. And when you first read Becker, you're just—I think, I don't know—but for me, I was just blown away. It really does sort of, the shock. There's a shock. There's the, and I studied Freud and Jung, and I'm really into psychotherapy, and it, this unconscious, the death denial is unconscious, so we don't know about it, until we start looking, or until death happens to us, and then, the original trauma is highlighted. So yeah, that was when I first read The Denial of Death, and the, as that unconscious fear becomes conscious, it is such a shock to the system. But I'm pleased to say, on the other side of it, there's lots of positive psychological effects, which I'm sure we'll go into as the interview goes through.
No, we may just stay on the sad side. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Well, I saw that it's Shocked to Death was the name of the podcast, wasn't it?
It is,
Scared to death, yes.
Scared to death.
Scared to death. I was like,
Yes.
oh no. Get a lot of horror movie fans in
No.
Europe.
It sounds like Becker provided like a lot of clarity for you and after the shock, after the matter of the fact. So how does it play a part in the way you live your life and your music as well? You said there's a connection.
Becker's a huge influence on my songwriting, not just existentialism, but all of his work. I wanted to talk about mechanisms of defense, and Becker talks a lot about repression and denial, and these are psychoanalytical terms for defense mechanisms. It's the way that our ego uses defenses to defend against our internal drives and our internal wishes, and also these, the external world, which you could say is survival and reproduction, or all of our the things we need to do when we go into the world. And these mechanisms help us to defend ourselves from the terror of death. I read Anna Freud. I don't know if you. She was Sigmund Freud's daughter. So she wrote a book called The Ego and Its Mechanisms of Defense. And this is really where all this denial and, I mean, Freud spoke a lot about repression, but she believed that we can mature our defenses as we go through the stages of life. So as we master our anxieties and we face our fear of death, we might become more altruistic, we might become anticipatory, and to act with more courage, humility, and humor in the face of overwhelming challenges of life. But just in terms of music and its evolution, I wanted to mention this ethnomusicologist that I really like. His name is Joseph Jordania, and he writes that humans have evolved noise as a defense.
Oh,
So
interesting.
just to consider this thesis, so most animals are afraid of loud noises. But human beings, we love fast cars, we love loud rock concerts, we love going to stadiums and cheering on sports teams. We're so noisy, we're such a noisy species.
Surrounded by sound,
Yeah, babies wailing, small children shrieking with delight, there's school children screaming in the playground. And you know what we call in Britain pubs. I don't know if they're called them over there.
I think we understand.
Bars,
I think,
bars. You know, like
bars.
Booming
Yeah.
music.
That's what you
Everyone's
said.
talking. And you know, and even I talk about my mum when she's on the phone, shouting down the phone.
I relate to
Hello.
that. Yes.
Yeah. But it doesn't make evolutionary sense. No other animal is this noisy.
That's
And
true.
you know, I spoke to him and he told me, yeah, we are the noisy ape. And we use the noise as a defense against predation. So against this is against being preyed upon by initially in our evolutionary story, animals. But obviously we've kept hold of that. And so death, yeah, being predated on is death. It's a fear of death. So we're really noisy. And what we're doing when we're making loads of noise is saying that I'm fit, I'm survive, I'm alive, you know, don't hunt me. I'm fit. And basically, so it's like a deep defense against death. It goes deep into our evolutionary past, and we can still see it in modern day.
That's actually really interesting. I mean, I used to be an opera singer, and I've never even thought of that. With opera singing, you can be a soprano and have the loudest noise come out of your mouth. So that's such an interesting perspective that I've just never thought of. But really fast, you went viral, Wilfie, which is amazing. How did that kind of change your whole perspective on mortality? Because we're talking about how death is our greatest fear, and yet, in human experiences, we go through such highs. And I think if you have, when you're a musician, how hard it is to kind of get recognition for your work. So, like, when you have that type of high in your life, how did that kind of change how you viewed mortality and viewed, things from that perspective?
A good question. One that I haven't really thought about. I mean, going viral was just an incredible flash of lightning. So one minute you're just this hardworking songwriter trying to get your music out. The next minute, I mean, it didn't go viral in America, it was just in UK. But it was just I was everywhere. Then people were messaging me going, "Can you stop being everywhere? I can't go online without seeing you." It literally was
Jealous,
everywhere: Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and then it was in all of our media. So it was in all of the newspapers, and I even went on TV and was on the news, and they did an interview, and then I got everyone to. I was singing the Beatles, and I was trying to get everyone. It was so much fun, and to watch the process of going viral was extremely interesting from an analytical point of view. Because I was like, the video went online, and I was just like Saturday night, Leicester Square, you know, so I was busking, and then the comments started happening, like, this is incredibly joyful, so much joy. Because basically, what happened for your listeners, I was busking, and then the crowd of people formed, and then they all started doing what we call in England the conga. I don't know if you get that, which is a single line where everyone dances behind each other,
Yep,
and we are
we have it
familiar.
over. I've
We
seen the
have it.
video and it
You've
looks
seen the
like,
video.
yes, it looks like such a fun experience. You
It
provided
was
so many
just, I
people
think the
so
video
much
was,
joy.
it was a lot of joy, and it was multi-race. You know, there was like, there
Sure,
was
yeah.
none of these boundaries. It was just human beings having a lot of fun, you know, and in an unexpected place, because I didn't know this, but London Underground is quite unfriendly to people. For me, I don't get that because I'm quite a friendly guy, but yeah, so people say London's really unfriendly and people don't talk to each other. I've never found that, but so that was really, you know, what captured people's imagination. It was this really unfriendly place where a lot of
Yeah.
joy was happening, and you know, the boundaries were, you know, there was even a little child on there, and she was doing the conga and laughing. If you watch the video, she's just fleetingly in there, you know. It's just this
Yeah,
really
so
mixed
fun.
human beings, you know, no boundaries, just human beings having fun. And I think
Sure.
that's one part of why it went viral. But yeah, the process was interesting. You know, it was like 2,000 views, and then my mates were texting 2,000. Wow. You know, usually you get 50 or 100, you know, and then it was like the next day it was 10,000, and then I looked again, it was 25,000, and I was like, this is great, you know. Then it just went boom, 500,000, 1 million, 2 million, you know, on Twitter, 4 million. It was like, incredible spiral. But it was, it was a wonderful experience. But whether or not it's affected my mortality, I mean, if there is a God, I could probably show him the viral video and go, I did something of joy in this world, God. But so, I mean, I don't know about that, and I don't want to, I don't know. But I mean, we could talk about Becca saying that we have to transfer to either a parent figure or a God. So we might as well choose God, so then that we can put our awe and our mystery in above ourselves rather than on other human beings, which I like that, dear. I like that idea. I wouldn't say I was religious, but I'm certainly willing to take a leap of faith after reading Becca, because...
Absolutely. I do want to go back for a second. When you were talking about sound as a defense mechanism and stuff, just seeing the video and how much joy it brought to everyone through music and through sound, how do you feel that your music plays a part in providing people relief from anxiety and, you know, moments of peace and joy like that?
Yeah. Do you mean my own songwriting, or do you mean music in general?
Either or, however you'd like to interpret it, but specifically to you, your own songwriting.
Yeah. I mean, because I think music in general gives us relief from our anxieties, even if for the briefest moment. I mean, Arthur Schopenhauer, you know, this philosopher from Germany, he believed that, you know, art gives us an escape for a moment. We can just, for a moment in time, we can escape into, away from our worries, away from the denial of death, away from all of our things we have to do, like make money and grow old.
Right. Life's demands.
Life's demands, and find a successful career and put up with that person over there who's clearly on a different path and needs to get on with their life a bit more, you know.
Yeah,
we have all of these things where Schopenhauer said art allows us that transcendental moment where we can just, you know, great art should allow us to escape for a moment in time, which, you know, I certainly bring this into my songwriting. And I wanted to just talk a little bit about the first song that we're going to play for you. It's called The Philosopher.
Yes, please.
And so I love my philosophy, as you probably know. And so Schopenhauer wrote, all philosophy begins in a minor chord. So what he's saying is that you could learn more about philosophy from nature, music, and art than you can from actually reading a philosophy book. And when I read that, it said begins in A minor chord. I thought, oh, I gotta play A minor. And so... So the song The Philosopher talks about Carl Jung's theory of the shadow. You know, these feelings of inferiority, self-hate, guilt, hostility. Are you familiar with this, with the shadow, or should I sidestep that, or can we talk about that? Or
you want to go ahead, Aya?
No, go for it.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think I've heard of it, but it hasn't been expanded on for me.
It's just basically there's a side of ourselves that we reject, and it's like our inferiority, our self-hate, our guilt. And what we do is we deal with that by projecting it onto others. We say, I'm not bad, but that person's bad.
Absolutely.
And basically it just passes the buck of the problem. So as for overcoming the terror of death, you know, I've found great relief in the human life cycle. Because as every living being has a life cycle, so we have birth, childhood, adolescence, adulthood, middle age, and old age and death. But with this in mind, when we see the bigger picture, you know, perhaps we can pay the price nature asks. It will lessen our fear of death. We'll just live out our human life cycle. You know, the price nature asks, Becca says, to grow up, to grow old, illness and death. You know, so then we can have some optimism and just get on with the business of living now, with death as a natural conclusion. Now, I've jumped a bit about from Schopenhauer to the shadow and, you know, overcoming this cycle of death, but the song of philosopher, which we're about to play, Peter, is written from a third person perspective about overcoming death anxiety. So the lyrics suggest that the character in the song can accumulate all the pleasures in the world, all the riches, all the power and esteem in life, But unless you face and overcome death anxiety, you can't fully live. You know, the death anxiety, the unconscious fear will rule their life. And so this is a clip from my upcoming album, The Song of Philosopher.
Too hard to say you're feeling low, too hard to see the shadow, too bad that philosophy won't help you find the philosopher. Too bad to say you're looking old, too busy chasing fool's gold, too bad that philosophy won't help you find the philosopher's stone.
Good pausing, people.
Good team pausing. Great work.
Great work. Okay, so can we go on to another song called For a Moment in Time?
Yes, please, go ahead.
So another song, as I said, about Schopenhauer's theory, For a Moment in Time, we can escape the ordinary world and live in this external, in art, can bring us alive and salve the wound of our troubles. So this song is called For a Moment in Time. It's certainly about the transience of time. When we look at this big picture of life, birth, childhood, adolescence, middle age, you know, old age, death. When you look at the big picture, it goes like a flash. And obviously when we're in the moment and in the world, it doesn't seem like that. But whilst I was writing the album, my father was diagnosed with untreatable cancer.
Oh, wow.
And sadly, he died in November 2020.
Wow.
So 2020, the year I went viral, I discovered Becca, I lost my mentor, Alessandra Cavalli, and then my father died. So it was a real coming to the denial of death in my life.
Yes. What a turbulent year. Yes.
And when my dad died, we were speaking about Becca, and I hope that you cannot know whether our Becca-inspired conversations helped him. But I feel like we both encouraged each other to face this with a stoic heroism. But he was more ill than I would ever admit, which is true death denial, isn't it? And I was sure we'd have one last Christmas together, but unfortunately he died on 24th of November, 2020. Yeah. So it'll be his year anniversary next week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty sad time in my life. And but one morning after he died, I sat at the piano and the sun shone through. It's a weird transcendental moment. And
inspiration
and mourning. And I just went to the piano and this melody line came, and it was it turned out to be For a Moment in Time. And so this is now a clip from a song for my upcoming album. The song is called For a Moment in Time.
Now there, out of nowhere, fortune smiles at you. For a moment in time, fate arrives. For a moment is all that is true.
This is good pausing, isn't
it? I think
this is going to work,
We're absolutely killing this pausing game, I swear.
We are on top. We're on fire.
Really?
On fire. Can I go to another song?
Yes, just keep on going. We love hearing about it. Yes.
I got two more songs I'd like to mention, if that's okay. Should I just do that now? Or
go for it, yes.
Yep. So this next song is called Fireball. Okay, and this is the song that led me to the Becca Foundation. Mm-hmm. So Lindsay, I basically followed her incredible work with the terror management theory. And we basically became instant fellows after sharing a passion for Becca's work. Mm-hmm. And at the time that we were talking, she was writing her new book, The Psychology and Anxiety Behind Flight Anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like about flying and plane crashes. And unbeknownst to us both at the time, I was also writing the song called Fireball, which is about a plane crash.
Oh.
So it's basically the song... Wow. The song talks about a couple that have an argument, and then the guy, or, you know, it doesn't matter, the character goes to the airport and then doesn't get on the plane because of this argument. And the next day they find out that the plane has crashed. Wow. And they are I mean, in the song, the character believes it's a spiritual hand that has come down, and you sort of see an unfolding spiritual transformation of the character in the song as mm-hmm. as the song progresses. And towards the end, then, you know, there's hallelujahs, there's a choir singing, you know, God has spoken and saved him. But I mean, basically, I was reading James Hillman. I don't know if you know him, a song called The Soul's Code. Mm-hmm. And he talks about this idea of our lives having a deep meaning and purpose, and how fate, or what the ancient Greeks called our daemon, can guide our lives. It's like a higher self, or I think the Greeks called it the Romans called it our genius. And they, on your birthday, you'd celebrate your genius, not your self's birthday. I don't think genius is the word that we use it in today. It means something different. Everyone mm-hmm. has a genius. Everyone has a daemon. So this was the idea. But, you know, in the clip we're going to play, it's the bridge, and it talks about rising like angels and falling like apes. And this is something I got from Becker's book, The Denial of Death. And he's talking about Kierkegaard. You know, there's a paradox between our incalculable worth in our mind, our imaginations, and this body that, to quote Becker, says is worth about 98 cents in elements. You could go to the hardware store and so obviously nowadays neuroscience has revealed that the human brain is actually the most advanced piece of hardware known in the universe, is right. a priceless mm-hmm. worth. But we can understand the paradoxical picture of Becker's painting. Kierkegaard argues that it's because we are a synthesis of both angel and beast, this mm-hmm. imagination and body that will die and be worm food. You know, we cannot do away with the spirit, and we cannot sink down into being holy animal. So we cannot flee from the dread of death. Our imagination, our minds allow us to see the past, the present, and the future, which is consciousness. So we cannot flee. But Kierkegaard and Becker believe we're somewhere between an angel and an ape. We're not holy apes, which, you know, Freud or Newton. I think Newton was quite spiritual, actually. But, you know, Steven Pinker, Richard Dawkins, these modern thinkers, they think we're just apes. We're just in this mechanical universe. But, mm-hmm. but Kierkegaard and people like Ian McGilchrist that are writing a lot in the modern era, they're saying, no, we're more, there's something more. And quantum physics is showing that there's something more there too. It's not just a mechanical animal universe. So yeah, this is a clip from the song from my upcoming album. It's called Fireball.
Morning rain pattered on my window pane, the melody of yesterday. We rise like angels and fall like apes. We fight like sinners and forgive like saints.
Top pausing team. This is really good teamwork.
I think we should go out on the road with this bit.
We should go out on the road. When yeah. I go on tour, you come over to London and we're all...
Well, yeah, exactly. We'll leave school. It was...
Yeah, all right.
I'm dropping out.
I'm dropping out. Lindsay,
this is it. Yeah. But just have the final song now, then.
Yes,
which sure, really yep. well. So, the final song.
Yes, I am. Okay, sorry.
So, the final song then is called A Need to Breathe. And I was really in an existential angst at the time when I wrote it. Mm-hmm. So, I wrote this song in 2017 and I'd fallen life threateningly ill. And oh, wow. It was really the first time that I'd had to face the possibility of my own death alone.
Mm-hmm.
Within this time, I really faced the darkness of life, or what Becker calls nature red in blood and claw, or the mm-hmm. worm at the core, which is William James's quote about death, mm-hmm. The original trauma. But I mean, this was 2017. So basically, you know, I thought I was going to die. It was a terrible time. And mm-hmm. I looked into the void of nothingness that a meaningless life and extinction induces. And I actually found, to my great surprise, incredible solace in Charles Darwin's theory of evolution.
Oh.
Because I love this quote from Darwin. He says, from such simple beginnings, endless forms, most beautiful and most wonderful. And what he means is from single-celled organisms, we have this abundance of life on Earth now. Different trees, different insects, different plants, different animals. You know, life is alive on Earth. And if the theory of evolution is correct, which is our closest scientific theory that we have now for the evolution of life, and I'm not even saying that God didn't plant that original seed. No one knows. So we can take so much comfort from the fact that we're alive, and you look around, life is alive, and you are part of the evolution of life on Earth. That is something that is something that is true. And I found that is just, I found so much solace from that. You know, that I was here. It was kind of like I was here, you know. And yeah, I mean, that's really the story of evolution on life that gave me profound comfort and meaning in my darkest hour. And I did survive, but I wrote this song, and it was called "I Need to Breathe," and it was basically about, you know, that when you face the denial of death, or I was actually thought I was dying, you know, the need to breathe becomes very pertinent. That is what we really need more than any of status, power, sex. You know, it was the need to breathe that became very pertinent.
And so, do you think, sorry, keep going, actually, keep going.
Well, I was just going to do the old world famous Dream Team pause.
Yes.
So this song is coming from my upcoming album. This song's called "A Need to Breathe."
Getting high in the morning, lad said you wanted to fly. Survival of the fittest, now there's a mountain to climb.
Oh, well, class pausing.
This is why we rehearse.
This is just great pausing. I'm sort of done with all my songs that I want to quote now. So
thank you so much for sharing.
Seriously.
I love how enriched your music is with philosophy and psychology. I'm very excited to hear the full album.
Oh, great. You need to get on my social media. Can I do a little social media
plug? Absolutely. Why don't we end with a little social media plug and give us anything else you're doing in the future? If you have an album release date you want to share?
I don't actually.
Oh,
okay.
There definitely will be a single in... either February, March, or April 2022.
Those are solid.
Yeah, solid days. I did have a date, but it's been moved back. It just keeps getting moved back. There's so much to do with an album release. But yeah, I mean, 2022 will be, I mean, I've worked so hard up until this point, and 2022 will be when it's released. And I do actually have, I know this is going out mainly in the US, but I'm playing a really special gig on the 23rd of July, 2022, at the 100 Club in London. It's a really prestigious venue. I'm so excited about it. I'll be headlining. And so, yeah, if you're in London, come and see me play live. And the single should be out, early 2022. But obviously, get on me Insta, get on me Twitter, get on me Facebook, and we become friends.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really look forward to seeing what you do in the future and keeping up with you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And we really appreciate you coming in all the way from London over Zoom.
No problem. Thank you for getting up early to interview me.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you so much for joining us all today on the podcast. We want to thank you again, Wilfie Williams. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Scared to Death podcast. And that's it. That's a wrap.
Morning rain, patted on my window pane, the melody of yesterday. We rise like angels and fall like apes. We fight like sinners and forgive like saints.